Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Welcome to the April 17th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined by my colleague Daniel Galvan as we're going to discuss everything going on in the world of mixed martial arts, and who else? Maybe other things might come up in this podcast, but coming here on this week's edition of the show, going to have three fighter interviews for you. As you're going to hear from Thomas Gifford, going to be a part of next week's UFC on ESPN3 card. He's going to be taking on Roosevelt Roberts. Had a chance to talk to him as he is a son of a preacher, man. So had a really interesting conversation with him. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Alima Leigh McFarland, who's going to be defending her Bellator title next week at Bellator 220. Had a great conversation with Alima Leigh. A lot of it not really about her fight coming up. I will tell you this. I found out one of her big pet peeves is when people spell her last name with a capital F. It's actually lowercase, so I found that out about Alima Leigh. And also, you're going to hear my conversation with Derek Cruikshank, who fights next Wednesday, April the 24th, on UFC Fight Pass at WXC 77 Warrior Wednesday 2. And at the end of the interview, you're going to hear Derek respond to people calling him a racist in a video that is now online. Momentarily, we're going to recap what happened last weekend at UFC 236. And then after the interviews, you're going to hear us talk about the Forbes article about bare knuckle boxing, Rich Franklin going into the UFC Hall of Fame. And of course, we're going to preview Saturday's UFC St. Petersburg card, of course, taking over place in Russia, headlined by a heavyweight main event. Of course, always appreciate you taking time out to listen to this podcast. Always appreciate people subscribe, rating, and reviewing to the show on the various podcasting platforms. Really do appreciate those 5-star reviews. And look, if you like what you're listening here, me and Daniel would appreciate those 5-star reviews. But Daniel, man, how you doing, man?
Jason, I'm doing good. I feel like you would have had a bigger pep in your step if we were recording and the Orlando Magic somehow won the game 2 and ended up being 2-0, but I see you guys got completely and totally drilled. As they're 1-1, Jason, my Houston Rockets, they're doing hot. So I got a pep in my step, Jason, but I tell you what, man, UFC 236, those top two fights are absolutely amazing, and I felt honored being one of the 14 people that were able to watch it. I feel like you had to do like a Jenga puzzle underwater while being shocked in order to purchase the pay-per-view as it transitioned to ESPN+. But I'm grateful that I watched it. And if you happen to watch that main card, those top two fights, Jason, you're talking about Gaslam Adesanya being the best fighter of the year and Holloway Poirier absolutely being a top 5 fight of the year.
I will tell you, yeah, I'm a little down this morning. Last night I watched maybe the most epic collapse in NHL history with my Bolts going out in 4 games after winning 62 games in the regular season. But hey, I'll take the Magic being 1-1 heading into game 3. If you had told me going to game 3 Magic are 1-1 with the Raptors, I'm taking it. But yeah, man, you're exactly right, man. The top 2 fights at UFC 236, you know, you mentioned about the issues with the ordering process. I kind of foresaw that coming. And so that's why Saturday afternoon, I'm like, let me go ahead and get in order this pay-per-view. And I thought ESPN had, and the UFC had done a sufficient job in letting everyone know that, hey, you're not going to be able to buy this thing on the app. You have to go to the ESPN website and order it. And I can tell you from my personal experience, ordering it was really a piece of cake for me. You know, went on there and, I was already signed into my ESPN Plus account, and it noted that, you know, the special price they had of $79.99 was not available for current subscribers to ESPN Plus. So it would be $59.99. Okay, cool. You know, put my credit card information in, no problem. And then, I would say within about 30 minutes of this pay-per-view starting, you start kind of seeing some tweets. My co-host on the DFS show that I do, Pete Rogers Jr., you know, he tweeted out that he was having issues. And I just quoted the tweets and, hey, is anybody else having similar issues? And Bloody Elbow ends up retweeting that, and man, it was just a firestorm. And Dana White, in the post-fight press conference, really downplayed it a little bit, which I was kind of surprised. But man, if you were able to watch these fights, you know, the top two fights were unbelievable. The prelims, you know, I don't think it, you know, there's not anything really on the prelims. I think that, you know, 4 or 5 weeks from now, the people are going to remember it's all about the main event, co-main event, and it's just unbelievable fights. And to me, I think that, you know, when we talk about fight of the year at the end of this year, I think both these fights are going to be in there. Obviously, Adesanya and Gaslam is going to be up there. You know, one of the things that, you know, it really sticks out to me about Adesanya and Gaslam is that fourth round when Kevin Gaslam has him rocked and he goes for a takedown. Like, man, that is going to be a sequence that Kevin Gaslam, I don't know how he gets past that. Because, you know, 5, 6, 10 years from now, whatever his career ends up being, that's going to be a moment he looks at and said, God damn, how much money did I cost myself by going for that takedown?
I know. It's a moment when you rewatch the fight. There was an opening there to put him away. I mean, it has to be tough to watch in retrospect, but it's a fight where it was unbelievable. It was incredibly back and forth. I mean, hell, Adesanya probably shouldn't even have had this fight go to the judges' scorecards, to be honest with you. Watching the end of that fifth round, I felt like if that scenario played out at 2 minutes and 30 seconds of any given round, the fight would have been stopped before the bell sounded, because it felt like Adesanya was just teeing, like the fight was over, in my opinion. Kelvin, that was definitely a mistake there. And we see it quite often when guys have fighters hurt with their stand-up. They look at it as an opening to maybe score a takedown, score some points, and utilize the top position to land more strikes. But when you go for that maneuver, it allows your opponent enough time to recover. And more times than not, we don't see it work out. We usually only see that scenario work out when the guy gets a takedown and locks on a submission. We've seen that work out sometimes, but more times than not, it doesn't. And for Gaslam, like, to me, it was all about, in this fight, his best moments are when he landed those power shots. And Adesanya was a very smooth and silky striker, especially early on in this fight. And it kind of felt like if Gaslam landed that huge shot, that was his road to victory. The path to victory was the finish on the feet. And that moment was absolutely there. I just think he made the wrong choice, definitely. But at the end of the day, if you watch this fight, this was definitely a star-making performance for Israel Adesanya. I mean, he comes across like a special talent. And it's all rainbows and sunshine from here on out. He's going to be a part of big fights. Obviously, Adesanya Whitaker in Australia is probably the next move to go. Obviously, John Jones wants a piece of him. And if you are someone who has bought stock in Israel Adesanya, he in turn is rewarding you. Not only did he put on a fight of the year, but he's moving on up. And Adesanya versus Whitaker, that's going to be an incredibly tough fight for Whitaker. I just don't know if there's a single person at 185 pounds that can stand and trade with Adesanya and get their hand raised after the fight's over.
How about Adesanya going for submissions in the fight? If you would have told me Israel Adesanya will attempt a submission and go for multiple submissions, I would have said you're nuts.
I know. I mean, it's not as crazy as maybe if you told me like Khalil Roundtree went for a takedown, but that was still crazy, right? Like, I absolutely, when I look at Adesanya and you watch him fight, you do the preview, I'm never going to come out here and be like, Adesanya, you got to watch out for his submission attempts and his grappling, Jason. Like, it's 100% about what he does on the feet. And you see a guy who's super elite in that aspect. And when you look at potential champions, guys who could become undisputed champions, and I have to use that caveat now because every other fight's an interim title fight, but guys who have the potential to be undisputed champions in their weight class, what do you look for? Well, once they start hitting that top gear and they're a part of the competent, like the top tier of their weight class, you still see development and improvement. And if you still see that, that's when you're like, damn, this guy has got it going on. And for Adesanya, he's absolutely got it going on. There's little things you notice. new wrinkles to his game where he's just continuing to upgrade it. So for Israel Adesanya, I mean, it was clear early on that this guy had a whole hell of a lot of potential. More times than not, when you have fighters with the potential, Jason, they don't pan out in this way. But Israel Adesanya absolutely has. And for Kelvin Gastelum, it's not like this was a devastating loss. I mean, it is. Like you go home and your whole face hurts and you kind of got to climb back. But if you watch the fight, he went toe-to-toe in two of these rounds, or three in these rounds up until game rocked. And really throughout the whole fight, he went toe-to-toe with just an elite talent in Adesanya. And if things change, maybe a harder punch lands, more flush, he could come out with interim title. So it's a tough loss. Any loss is tough. But for Kelvin Gastelum, I think you can rewatch this fight and understand that you gave Israel Adesanya an absolute war. And that's something you can hang your hat on.
Yeah, just unbelievable fight. I was kind of laughing after the fight's over. Dana White's like, yeah, you know, originally we were thinking about having Whitaker and Adesanya United States. I'm like, what? What? You guys were even considering putting this fight in the U.S.? Like, no, you put that fight in Australia. You put it in, yeah, that's a potential stadium show for them. And that definitely is a fight that I'm very intrigued by, you know, seeing Bobby Knuckles and Israel go at it. You know, then, of course, after we have that tremendous five-round fight, then we have Dustin Poirier and Max Holloway go out there for 5 minutes. And, man, Dustin Poirier, there was that moment in the first round, you thought he was going to finish Max Holloway, and he can't finish Max. And I don't think there was many moments in the fight where I thought Max would be able to pull off, you know, something to get the stoppage. To me, it was a great performance by Dustin Poirier. I thought he did a really good job of mixing in his grappling along with the strikes that he landed. Just an unbelievable fight. You know, potentially now, you know, setting up that title unification bout with Khabib Nurmagomedov. Did you see Khabib's tweet where he thought it was a draw?
No, I didn't see Khabib's tweet where he thought it was a draw.
How do you consider that a draw?
Did he? I don't know. There's no way he was watching it. I mean, that was a great fight. Max Holloway had quite a few close rounds, but this was clearly 4-1 or 3-2 for Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, it was. Here was his tweet. He goes, I don't agree with the judges 49-46. I got a draw. My respect for both fighters and Poirier's achievement so far cannot be denied. My congratulations, Dustin. See you in September. Has the emoji eagle versus emoji diamond.
I was going to figure he just didn't want to fight Dustin Poirier, but maybe he does. I mean, that's a – there you go. Poirier versus Nurmagomedov, and don't know how he scored that one a draw, Jason. The shame for Khabib, and again, just a spectacular fight, absolutely a spectacular fight. The shame for Khabib is this was a star-making performance for Dustin Poirier, but it definitely doesn't feel like he's a star on Tuesday, which is on Wednesday, excuse me, which is a bit of a shame. If you know, it just feels like if fights like we saw on Saturday happened 5 years ago, there would be a lot more momentum for Dustin Poirier and Israel Adesanya as name fighters. And I don't know what it is other than there's less eyeballs on the sport currently, and there's the oversaturation of the sport has made fights more meaningless. I think that's what it is, because how can you not watch Poirier have this fight with the featherweight champion of the world and not have Poirier versus Nurmagomedov potentially be a 400,000 to 500,000 buy show? That's what it should have been. And if you match up Poirier and Nurmagomedov on a normal pay-per-view, I honest to God think that does 200,000, maybe 180,000 buys. Could be wrong, but that's what I feel, Jason. And that's a bit of a shame.
You know, one of the things I think you have to – by the way, I'll give you another crazy little note here. If you go over to MMADecisions.com and you click on Poirier Holloway, Kendrick Johnson of the Sports Daily scored it 48-47, Max Holloway.
Really? Sports Daily? What is the hell? Let's see. Sports Daily, it seems like an interesting little website here.
Never heard of it. But here's the other thing I'd point out, and I know Dana White mentioned this because I think it was in relation to a question. When you look at the UFC in 2019 so far, and you can really go back to the end of 2018, for, you know, outside of UFC 234, find me a main event that didn't deliver.
Ooh.
I'm going to go down your main events. Cejudo Dillashaw, Assuncao Moraes, Adesanya Silva, Ngannou Velasquez, Blachowicz Santos, Jones Smith, Luis Dos Santos, Till Masvidal, Thompson Pettis, Barboza Gaethje, Holloway Poirier.
You're damn right. And I think we've been previewing these shows every single week, Jason. The one thing UFC has done is done a great job of putting out main events for hardcore main fans. 100%. It seems that they have the drawing board and they're like, this show is a main event, this show is a main event, this show is a main event. Crap, we need to fill it with 14 more fights. That's why you end up with Dwight Grant and Alan Joe Boyan on the main card. So you're right, man. They prioritize the main event, and they prioritize it in two ways. You could tell. It's all about star power and fightability. Like, they constantly put on fights in the main event slot that are guaranteed to be fight of the night contenders.
Yeah.
This fight was great, man. It was unbelievable. Poirier surprised me. My biggest takeaway regarding Max Holloway is, damn, he landed volume for sure. But simply put, watching this contest, the difference was the size, I felt like, of Dustin Poirier. It felt like Max Holloway. He was landing those strikes. The volume was there. The technique was there. Unfortunately, the zip wasn't there. And for Poirier, when he landed on Holloway, the power was. So it's like Max Holloway could land 10 punches, Jason, and one counter from Poirier just erased everything Holloway did on the scorecards, and that just sucks for Max Holloway.
The thing about Poirier is, yes, he's a former 145er, but he has had time to develop his body into a 155-pound fighter, and you really saw that. Now, when you look at this run that he has been on, you know, going since returning to the lightweight division, so it's wins over Carlos Diego Fajeya, Yancey Medeiros, Joseph Duffy, Bobby Green, Jim Miller, Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, and now Max Holloway. Of course, he had a loss against Michael Johnson and the no contest against Eddie Alvarez. There's one thing that I look at all these guys, maybe the exception of Jim Miller, that all have something in common.
They're all smaller?
No.
Oh.
Okay.
They all,
so
what is it?
We all know who his next fight is. We expect to be.
Oh, they're all stand-up fighters.
And that's why after the fight was over, I tweeted, I said, after this performance, does this change your opinion of Dustin Poirier versus Khabib Nurmagomedov? And it does. I mean, look, he could easily go in there and light up Khabib, and Khabib can't go. But look, Khabib's going to go in. He's going to take him to the guy. I still think Khabib rolls through Dustin Poirier.
Well, Khabib's got the ability to roll through most fighters in the weight class because of what you said there. Dude, the wrestling equation is such a formidable foe in the world of sports, in the world of MMA, man. You have the ability to out-wrestle a guy. You have the ability to dominate him. Simply put, you can put your opponent in a position he doesn't want to be in on his back. That is just – it's so difficult to – we've seen good wrestlers get dominated by great wrestlers. And that's such a dangerous skill to have as champion. I mean, you look at this top 15 in the lightweight division. It is just absolutely littered with fighters with significantly talented stand-up games and okay wrestling games. And it's just like a perfect weight class for Nurmagomedov to run rampant.
Oh, you know who I've got. I'm becoming the president of the fan club on, right?
It's got to be Gillespie, no?
Oh, yeah, man. Telling you what, there is guy, and Gregor Gillespie, and look, and I was talking to somebody who's playing in this game I really trust, and we were talking about, if you look at the greatest threat to Khabib Nurmagomedov's reign as champion in that lightweight division, Gregor Gillespie has to be the, I mean, yes, Khabib could get caught, but in terms of wrestling, there is no one in the top 15 that can challenge Khabib in terms of wrestling. Gregor Gillespie is the only guy. I mean, like, you look at the top 10 contenders, how many of those guys are signing up to fight Gregor Gillespie?
None of them. You're totally right. He's a name that sticks out like a sore thumb when you look at that top 15. Gregor Gillespie's on a fast track challenge for a title. And honest to God, like, he would absolutely be, I think, one of the betting odds favorites to potentially beat Khabib. For sure. Poirier obviously is up there because he's just damn good. But you match him up with Nurmagomedov, he's going to be a heavy dog, in my opinion. And it's going to be through the wrestling. I mean, what Poirier does is he's really good at scrambles, Jason. And he might be able to survive and maybe, you know, throw on a submission attempt and get lucky. But Khabib's such a strong grappler, it seems unlikely. I mean, the biggest what if in the entire lightweight division is a simple one. What if Tony Ferguson physically didn't completely deteriorate? Because you look at the run he went on heading into 2018, the Nurmagomedov-Tony Ferguson fight, had it happened one of the 17 times it was booked, I think Tony Ferguson represented one of the biggest threats Nurmagomedov would have fought in his run. And that's just a fight I don't know if we'll ever see. And even if we do see those two in the cage together one day, you got to think, with all the time off, all the recuperation from injuries, El Kakui's got to be a different fighter. I mean, doing your own rehab, I think, is probably a stupid idea.
He's got personal issues.
Yeah. And I haven't even touched on the personal issues.
I mean, look.
What we've seen, the news is just rough.
Yeah, and I saw Dana White I forget the exact comment Dana said, but basically Dana's like, look, he's got to, you know, we've got to get some things looked at with him. And you know, right now, the time is not for, and the quote was, say, Dana goes, UFC doctors must evaluate Tony Ferguson before returning to the octagon, which you totally agree. I mean, Tony's got issues there. You know, I did see Ali Abdelaziz on Twitter noting that Conor McGregor has been offered a fight against Justin Gaethje. Dana White and Conor are scheduled to meet next week down in South Florida. So, and it's so comical now with Conor. It's like, once a UFC main event ends, cue the tweet, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Oh, there's the Conor tweet. Oh, yeah, he wants to fight that guy. Cue the tweet.
Yeah, he probably schedules it and then just has different results. And just someone's job is to delete the one who loses.
Now, when it comes to UFC 236, outside of the main event, co-main event, to me, the fighter that sticks out, and by God, I did not see this one coming, Khalil Roundtree Jr. Oh, my God. What a performance.
Dude went to Thailand and is a different person, huh?
Dude, whenever he learned to Thailand, I think it was John Hector in the broadcast goes, boy, flights to Thailand just got a lot more expensive.
Yeah, dude, that's an old school storyline. If you watch the UFC when there were two double-digit pay-per-views, one of the old school storylines is this fighter went to Thailand and spent some time in Thailand, and he's back, and he's a different fighter now. Like, that was like an old school, like, it was like a shaman trip to wherever people go on shaman trips to. I'm not super sure. I think it's like, I don't know, some place in the Middle East or whatever. That's what it was for MMA. You go to Thailand, you get the hell kicked out of you. You drink some drinks, you know, some eagle egg or whatever. I saw Nacho Libre. I know that's what they did in Nacho Libre. I don't know what they do with Thailand, but you change your diet, you learn discipline, and you just train all day, and it's hard training. Like, that was old school MMA, change your career arc. Khalil Roundtree went and did that, looked phenomenal. We both know how talented Eric Anders is, and man, he dominated Eric Anders, Jason. I will say this, I hate to be the negative Nancy, but for Khalil Roundtree, I still have a huge question.
Oh, look, with Khalil, it's like, okay, we've been down this road before. Let's see you win back-to-back fights. But here's an example why Eric Anders is a national treasure. Did you see his tweet after his fight was over?
I know he ate some humble pie, and he was okay with it, right? What'd he say?
Quote, haven't had my ass whooped like that since April 21st, 1987.
Yeah.
The day he was born. Now, you remember after the Thiago Santos fight, he said he hadn't been that tired since the night of his wedding. I mean, he's just like, you know, I will say this, though. I have a lot of respect for Mark Montoya. There's got to be a lot of questions of after the second round, was there ever a consideration of let's stop this fight?
Yeah, I think so. I think the commentators were obviously hinting at it big time, talking about it big time. And if the UFC commentators are talking about it, it probably should have already been called, is the way I look at it usually. So, yeah, I think the fight should have been, I think in the corner probably should have thrown in the towel, because unless you're going to go in there and try and wrestle him, I mean, why send him out there to strike with him? Like, it's, fight should have been called at this point.
Now, when it comes to the rest of this card, Dwight Grant, Alan Joe Bain was not a very good fight. Obviously Alan Joe Bain was upset with it, but when you go out there and you only land 24 significant strikes, it's kind of tough to state that, you know, you clearly won that fight. Even though I did like what he said, he's like, hey, I'd love to hear what, you know, basically saying, I would love to know why the judges scored against me and also what's their discipline in martial arts. The other thing that stuck out to me, Montel Jackson, great performance against Andre Sukuntha. You know, clear win for him. And I'm guessing I know the other thing that stuck out to you was.
I'm going to go with Alexander Pantoja.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's your boy.
Yeah, that's my boy. Freaking went out there and great fight with Wilson Hayes and finished Wilson. I'm a big fan of Pantoja. And again, a guy who I think would have challenged for the flyweight title, but we're already bearing that flyweight title like 5 feet under. I thought that was a great performance. Nikolai Krylov returns the favor on OSP, and he ends up tapping him out in that second round. Khalid Taha against Boston Sammage went out there and finished him. And then the other one is like Max Griffin and Zelim Imadayev. Apparently, Imadayev is like this crazy person who like talks a lot of crap and was hard in training. And I only heard the scuttlebutt. I mean, what info did you read more of the articles and the like? What's up with Zelim?
Oh, like did you hear? Apparently, he was trying to fight Max Griffin during fight week at a breakfast buffet. What is up with MMA fighters and buffets trying to start fights?
I know, it's so nuts. I wish.
Like I'm sitting there going, I'm thinking about like who is like the elderly couple that's sitting there just trying to have a nice little, you know, meal at a buffet in Vegas or, you know, this one in Atlanta. And they're like, oh, hey, there's a fight break. Like, I'm like, come on, guys. Like, God, man. Yeah, I have a feeling Zelim may not be very long for the UFC.
What's up, bro? You're stealing my croissant. There's only two more servings of eggs, and I want both of them. Get the hell out of it. Like what's the fight? Imadayev sounds nuts. I kind of love it, though. Like, I feel like they should have, like, completely and totally promoted the fact that Zelim wants to fight Max Griffin, like, anywhere and everywhere. And just those fights get me all jazzed up, especially if the guy who appears to be the good guy in the scenario, Max Griffin, comes out and gets the win in a fine fashion. So, yeah, it's a nice little, you know, cheese on the prelims.
Yeah, that's clearly becoming a little bit of an issue there for the UFC. So that's UFC 236. Of course, we got UFC St. Petersburg coming up this weekend. We'll preview that here later on in the show. But right now, it's the interview portion of the show. You're going to hear my interview with Thomas Gifford, who fights next week at the UFC card in Fort Lauderdale. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Alima Blade McFarlane. And then the final interview will be with Darren Cruikshank. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man's going to make his UFC debut, UFC on ESPN3, course coming up here on April 27th here in my home state of Florida, is Thomas Gifford taking on Roosevelt Roberts. Thomas, man, I appreciate time. I was watching an interview you did where you talked about, you know, you're obviously proud of your Arkansas roots, but I know you went up to California, Team Alpha Male, now Factory X. And you really talked about Team Alpha Male about, you know, look, I understand that people want to take me down. That's what they're going to want to do. They don't want to stand with me. Besides the wrestling aspect, was there any other major takeaways you just took around being around that team and seeing, you know, how other fighters, you know, prepare themselves for fights?
Oh, yes, sir. I get to watch them firsthand. Cody Garbrandt, Chad Mendez was getting ready for a fight. And Uriah Faber, I mean, he might be retired, but he's nonstop in the gym. He's constantly working. And, I mean, they're just not wrestlers, but they know how to set up shots perfectly and by using their striking and their feints and their movement. And just they really gave me a good aspect of how not to get taken down with movement, but when I do get taken down, what to do after that.
And of course, you're now there at Factory X, and one of the things that was said to me was, you know, kind of what you believe Mark Montoya is going to make you a champion. I've had a chance to talk to Mark countless times. Do you remember like your first interaction with Mark and what stood out to him about you, or you stood out to about him?
Yeah, when I first saw him working, he was really telling me how I was messing up, and then he was making me feel it. It wasn't just, hey, you're doing this, you got to do this to make it right. He actually showed me and made me feel exactly what I was doing. And once I noticed what I was doing, he showed me how to fix it. And let alone showing me how to fix it, he allowed me to mess up and then be like, oh, did you feel that? I'm like, yeah, I felt it. And he goes, you're going to do this and do this. And then you feel the difference in my power, punching power. I feel the difference in my balance and the difference in my movement. And I thought I was using my reach right, but he showed me that I had 6 inches of extra reach that I wasn't using. So now I'm an extra 6 inches away from you and still popping you with good, hard, straight punches.
Is that one of those things like you kick yourself like, man, I wish I would have known this 5 years ago?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I thought I was a great boxer and I had great stand-up, but I've never been knocking people out. But now it's going to start happening. I'm going to be knocking people out and hitting them with hard, good shots.
And another thing that was said to me about you is once you sign with the UFC, you quit your daytime job as a lumberjack. So how did you get involved in being a lumberjack?
My father and my grandpa and my great-grandpa. I'm actually a fourth-generation lumberjack.
Oh, wow. Was it just something you had to make that decision of, look, I'm in the UFC. This has got to be a full-time thing for me because I can't be in this thing and having to worry about a daytime job and also trying to get your work in inside the gym?
Honestly, I was using that day job because my father being who he is and helping me out as good as he can. And my boss, Paul Wiley, he was a great supporter in my career. And anytime I needed to be off, anytime I had to go somewhere, like when I went to Team Alpha Male, I was gone for 30 days. When I came back, I still had a job. I still had somebody and some income coming in to help me out during that process. Because, I mean, it takes a lot of money to take a month off when you got bills, a brand new car and insurance, and you're trying to still pay everything while you're going off training and taking this career without a fight to pay for that.
And I know that you have your dreams of buying your own home, but what made me kind of interesting was that you want to be able to rescue abandoned and abused dogs. Is there a particular reason why, you know, that's kind of a dream of yours?
Yeah, honestly, I got a pit bull at 4 weeks and she had been beaten and abandoned. She was super skinny and super skittish. And it was kind of like she had Tourette's. When she walks in a room or she randomly, she will growl and bark randomly at nothing. You can feed her in a room by herself. She will growl and bark like somebody was attacking her or somebody was getting her food. And then my girlfriend had some baits. She loves dogs completely, and she changed my whole aspect on dogs because I thought, hey, I got the dog in a pen. I feed it every day. I love on it. I let it out. I play with it when I'm home. But now I try to keep my dogs inside all the time, and I try to make them feel like they are a person. And, like, she gives her dogs a buffet of food, and I feed my dogs one time a day, which is, I mean, it's hard to differentiate that, but it's just something. I mean, I want to take care of animals and I love dogs, period. And just something I can do back for them, because dogs have done so much for me. It's actually crazy. I got my nose ripped off by a dog. I don't know if you can see it. I got a big scar right here. When I was 5 years old, a German Shepherd part wolf attacked me and ripped off my nose. And I had plastic surgery and had reconstruction surgery on my nose. And then I wasn't afraid of dogs. I still love dogs. I still get in their face. I still play with them. And I mean, I hate seeing things hurt. Like when the oil spill happened and stuff, and I was young, but I still was like, man, the people are nice. That's great. And something I can do for somebody is my love for dogs and my girlfriend's love for dogs. It's just both of us have a dream of helping dogs and being good to dogs like they're people. And we see all these sad stories about dog fighting and people cutting off ears of dogs and stuff like that. And there's one way to stop that, and that's for me to have a place to shelter them dogs and take care of them like they should be taken care of. We shouldn't do that to any dogs. We wouldn't want nobody doing that to us. That's why we canceled out slavery. It's pretty much the same thing. We own a dog. We make the dogs do what we want, but we got to change that. We can't do that. We can't treat animals like that.
Yeah, as a fellow dog owner, I know what you mean there. I mean, do you kind of feel like, you know, being on the UFC platform, that maybe this is going to be able to speed up that timeline of being able to do what you want to do?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I went from making chump change to big money. And, well, for a small country boy that made $22,000 last year working my butt off 8 hours a day with a chainsaw, to making that in one fight. I mean, that's a life changer. And what am I going to do with all that extra money that I don't need? I'm going to give it back somehow. And first thing I want to do is get my own house, get my own land, and start taking care of dogs and giving back to everybody else.
And when it comes to your UFC debut here, I mean, I think you understand that people are going to look at you as the underdog in this fight. You know, Roosevelt made a little bit of a name himself on the Contender Series. For those people that are doubting you in this fight, what would your message to those people be?
Watch my fights on YouTube. Look at my background. I'm not some simple fighter that just lays there and gets punished or doesn't mind getting choked unconscious. I mean, I'm going to fight to the end, and I always fight my fight, and I'm not going to let anybody dictate that. And I'm not going to get stuck in a position and just sit there. I'm going to scramble. I'm going to do weird, crazy things. I'll flip my legs over my head. I'll put my legs in between in different places where he don't want them to be. And it's just going to be an awkward situation, but that's how I fight. I adapt to what people do to me, and I try to shut down their possibility of beating me. And I mean, I have a relentless pressure. I have an iron jaw, and I'm going to put it to the test on the 27th.
What do you believe your key to victory is?
My pressure and my experience. I know what it feels like to be beaten down and not being able to see, bleeding out my nose and my mouth, hard to breathe, out of breath, hurt ribs, hurt foot, hurt hand. It doesn't matter. That third round, that experience is going to come into play because he's not been there. He ain't been through those wars. I've watched all his fights and his amateur fights, everything I've found on YouTube, anything that I've seen about him on Google, I've watched it and I've been drilling it for the last month. And I don't see anybody fighting back like I would. And I mean, I see people laying there taking blows and then getting in a submission hold and not shrimping the guard or not using their abilities to where they should. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put him in awkward positions, and I'm going to do stuff that he's not ever been done to before.
Of course, I saw the nickname, the Young Lion. How did you obtain that nickname?
I was 16 training with my first jiu-jitsu coach, Everett Williams, and I'm a preacher's son. And he was a real Christian man. And he was like, man, you really remind me of the tribe of Judah, which is a lion. But the lion is the symbol of the tribes of Judah. There's 12 tribes of Judah. And just the biblical story about the lions having the courage. A young lion wants to be king. He's going to try his best to be king. He's going to overcome any outcome he has to. And he's all alone. He has to fight the best to be the best. He has to go work his way to the top. And a young lion is courageous and relentless in his attack. And my name is Thomas the Young Lion Gifford, and my team name is Team Relentless. So it all played together with that biblical aspect of the 12 tribes of Judah.
So being a preacher's son, when you let your family know you're going to be a professional fighter, was there people kind of sitting there going, I don't know about this?
No, they know that God made people come and fight. I mean, that's the way everything was won back in the day. They had to go to war, and they had to slaughter people, and they had to kill women, children, and all beasts. I mean, God, he says that in the Bible. He says, go and kill everything in your path. Do not leave anything. Do not take anything for yourself. And I mean, everything in this world has gotten us here because of the wars that we've fought and everything like that. And fighting, in my aspect, it's a sport. It's a way that I'm going to praise his name. And my whole family is very religious and very Christian, and they respect the fact that I'm taking my talents and my ability to spread his name.
And of course, we get to see your fight here, UFC debut, UFC on ESPN3 coming up on Saturday night, April the 27th, of course, down in South Florida. Thomas, I really appreciate time. Let everyone know they can follow you out on social media and, of course, those sponsors that have been helping out.
Thank you. Get my paper here. My good friend owns a Moonlight Dance Company. They really helped me out this past camp. All Points Transport, they're great supporters of mine. They've helped me out with both of my last two fights and my training camps. A&W Flowback Solutions, they have helped me with all my medicals in this fight, and they're going to continue sponsoring me and help me because they're a good Christian-based company. And Iron Jaw Custom Mouth Guards, they helped me fix my teeth because I got a couple knocked out. They helped me out with the mouth guard so I don't lose any more teeth. And then we got Bath Planet. They are the ones who sent me to Team Alpha Male. They done everything. They paid for the tickets. They paid for my money to stay there. They paid for my fees there. They paid for my housing. They really put me on the map when I found out that I was going to be able to go to the UFC. And then we got Mama's Bling for Latent Dreams. It's a local-owned business in Conway. She's a girl I went to school with, and she just wants to help me out in some way, and I thank her for that. And Factory X Muay Thai, they treat me like a family coming down here. Mark Montoya, it's a really great guy. He has a really great camp, and he's going to do great things this year. If you don't know this, but we're the number two. They're the number two gym in the whole world right now in 2018. And Jason House, my manager, he set all this up after my last fight. I signed with Team Iridium, and it went up from there. I didn't do nothing but get UFC offer after UFC offer, and finally I got my weight down and I was prepared for one, and now I'm going to take it April 27th. And last but not least is my friends and family. They all gave money and they contributed to me, and they are really the rock, the foundation of my support, because without them I wouldn't be here, because I started low. I was a young country boy, didn't know nothing, and they supported me in everything I've done.
Joining me now is a fighter that's going to be defending her Bellator title come up next week, Bellator 220, Alima Leigh McFarland. Alima Leigh, as always, I appreciate the time. One of the things we always hear in the fight game is how, you know, the fight that's in front of you is the toughest fight of your career. Why would you say this title defense is potentially the toughest fight of your career, as opposed to, say, what most people would probably consider, you know, your last fight being the toughest fight of your career?
Oh, so like you said, a lot of fighters always say that it's the toughest fight of the career, but I truly, truly believe that Vida is the toughest opponent or the most dangerous opponent that I will face, or that I've been matched up with. And I say that because this girl is not intimidated by anything. She's not intimidated by the bright lights. She's not intimidated by who's in front of her. She doesn't even care if her face is split open. You know, she'll freaking come forward, guns blazing. So that type of opponent is really, really dangerous. And I'm expecting an all-out brawl from her.
You know, I was on your Instagram account, and there one of the posts that kind of jumped out to me, where you said, "I've never been more excited for a fight before in this." Why is that?
Because I think that she's such a game opponent that it'll be really exciting. And so normally I am very nervous for my fight. And, you know, like you mentioned, Bellator Hawaii and Valerie Letourneau before this. And that one, my head was all over the place. There was a lot of pressure for me going into that fight, you know, fighting an opponent like Valerie, who, in my opinion, is one of the best female flyweight fighters in the world, fighting in my hometown in front of a sold-out audience that was, you know, all there for me. It's just headlining one of the biggest cards in Bellator history. Like, it's a lot of pressure. So this fight, there's not a I don't feel that same pressure. And I think that just makes it, it makes me excited, you know, that, that I'm going into this fight just looking to have a good time, you know, punching someone in the face and getting punched in the face. It's really, sounds really strange, I know, but yeah, I'm just excited. I know Vita's going to be super game.
You mentioned about that pressure and the nervousness that fighters get, and I hear from fighters all the time, but they'll say when that cage door locks and it's just you, your opponent, and referee, that those nerves kind of go away. Is that the same case for you?
Not really. I mean, honestly, the nerves go away as soon as I get punched in the face. That's when I'm like, oh, okay, I'm here. All right, I'm here. I, when they lock the cage door, I'm always like, oh my gosh, like I can't get out of this now. I really have to do this. But once you get hit for the first time, then it kind of snaps you back into reality. And you're like, oh, okay. All right, let's do this.
I also saw on your IG that you got a chance to be around Canelo and his team. What was your big takeaway being around, obviously, one of the biggest names in boxing in terms of how he gets himself ready for a fight?
Oh, it was really cool. I mean, to be totally honest, there was a language barrier. I mean, yeah, he understands English, but again, it, you know, it's very broken English. I don't understand nearly enough Spanish, but I'm actually going to be taking a Spanish course this summer. But yeah, so there, even though there's a language barrier, though, it was pretty cool to like try to communicate with each other and pick each other's brains about, all right, like, yeah, how many hours a day do you train? How much weight do you have to lose? So, yeah, it was cool. And, you know, I showed him videos of my underwater training. I was like, yeah, like, come out and train with me if you want. They invited me back to the gym. So it was all good. It was just, it was really cool to be in the presence of such a cool team, cool vibe. And, you know, champ to champ, it was really awesome moment.
Another post on IG that I saw that where you talked about, you know, things that have happened over your life over the last year and kind of things that you just never thought would happen. You mentioned about, you know, becoming a homeowner that you never thought that maybe that would happen a year ago. As you think about what the next 12 months would be, what would you want that post to be 12 months from now about the things you accomplish in this year?
Oh, that's a great question. So my career is going really well for me. And everything, I actually wrote out a mission statement, like for a vision board kind of, and I posted it above my bed. And I wrote this out about 2.5-3 years ago before I fought for the belt. And everything that I listed down in that statement has come true, except for the house part. That's the last thing. However, I'm in escrow right now. So as soon as I get this house, I will have accomplished all of those things. So the reason that I'm saying this is because I've been telling myself, all right, like once you get that house and you accomplish all those things, like what are you going to want to accomplish next? What is it? And, anyway, I guess if I'm going to be like selfish, I would say like, I want my love life to grow. I don't know. You know, like that's the only thing that's like weird about my life. Everything else is going super good. My career, my finances, blah, blah, blah. You know, I got a dog. Everything's freaking awesome. I have my scholarship going on. So I'm like, well, what is missing from my life? And I'm like, I think it's my personal love life because it's really hard maintaining a relationship, you know, being in my position. And so I'm thinking like, all right, I think that's the only thing missing. I think I need like a boyfriend or something. I'm like, maybe that'll be my next goal. I don't know. Or just to be in like a loving, supportive relationship right now, I think, or within the next year, I think might be a good goal set.
Yeah,
I
know. I saw you mention about being a dog owner. I'm a fellow dog owner, and one of the things that, and I don't know if this is the same way for you, but it's like you can be having the worst day at the office. You come home, and that dog can make you forget about anything bad that's happened during your work day.
Oh, 100%. 100. Yeah. So I talk about how, like, my dog has filled that void that I thought I was missing, you know, in terms of love. So, yeah, maybe my goal isn't necessarily to, like, get a boyfriend or something, but it's maybe to just, like, find love in other places, even if it's my dog.
I mean, you talk about goals. I would think outside looking in, the goal, maybe one of your goals and to achieve is to be known as the best 125-pound fighter in the world. Is that kind of on the list?
To be totally honest, like, not really. I really don't pay attention to rankings. I don't have that ego where I'm like, I want to be the best in the world. Like, and I think the reason I'm like that is because I never thought I was going to be a fighter. I never had that drive. I just wanted to lose weight. Like, that's how my whole fighting career started. So I don't know. It was never really important to me. And I think there's a lot more other things that are way more important to me. So yeah, I don't think necessarily that's a goal. Oh, I know a good goal. I want to open up my own gym, 10th Planet Oahu. Maybe that'll be my next. Yes, that's going to be it. That's going to be my next mission statement. I want to open up the 10th Planet Oahu.
Did you ever think, I mean, like 5 years ago, like, hey, I think I might want to own a gym one day?
No. Like 5 years ago, I was like, oh, I need to lose 10 pounds. But no, it was never an option when I first started this, but you know, it's been in the works actually. And we've been talking about it, and I actually haven't had a real job for about 3 years now. And so I'm like, okay, I think it might be time, Ilima, to like buckle down, especially if I get this house and I have a mortgage that I got to pay for. Like, I need to have a steady income. So I'm like, I think opening up a gym and running a gym will be, yeah, my next endeavor. Or, you know, I think I want to explore the entrepreneurial side and the business side of the sport. So I think for sure, yeah, that's going to be my next to-do list. And I need to learn Spanish.
As a business owner, I can tell you, as a business owner myself, I do like working for myself as opposed to working for somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, actually, yeah, so I lied. I have a lot of goals. Erase what I said about finding boyfriends. I want to open up a gym. I want to become efficient in Spanish. And I would like to become a certified yoga teacher. Boom.
So should I tell you where Tapology has you ranked?
No, what am I ranked?
They have you at 6.
Okay, whatever. Again, that kind of shit doesn't really faze me. But who are the other ones?
You got Jennifer Maya, Kaylin Kugijan, uh-huh, Liz Carmouche, who, of course, you're very familiar with, Jessica I, and then Valentina Shevchenko.
Oh, that's fine. I don't care. I honestly, like, don't even care about any of that. I'm stoked that Liz is up there. But yeah, rankings are so subjective.
Yeah, they are.
It's like somebody today told me that they're like, oh, ESPN has you ranked number 2. I'm like, oh, that's cool. But like, I don't know. They're all different to me.
But ultimately, the day, it really doesn't do anything for your paycheck currently.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Like, it does not affect my pay, so I don't really care.
But of course, we look forward to seeing your fight here next weekend, Bellator 220. Of course, live and exclusive on DAZN here in the United States. Lima, as always, I appreciate time and look forward to watching the fight next Saturday.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, dude.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's going to be fighting on UFC Fight Pass on April the 24th. It's Darren Cruikshank. Darren, man, I appreciate time back fighting in the United States. I got, yeah, obviously, that's got to be a big plus of this. You don't got to get on that plane and fly 13 hours.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? Ryzen pays me really well, so that trip is always welcomed. But I'm fighting locally in, you know, basically in Michigan, like basically maybe 10 minutes from where I grew up. So that's kind of cool. All my friends and family get to go and watch me. And I really like having, you know, my team there, because especially the up and coming guys, they get to see how I actually prepare mentally, physically, the weight cut, everything. So it's like a learning experience for all my guys too. So yeah, I really like it.
I saw you had your Instagram, which, by the way, anybody follows you on Instagram will see a lot about your shooting adventures are out there, as you let everyone know what's going on there. But there was one where you were it's a picture of you, you know, coaching one of the guys in your gym, and you talked about kind of passing along your knowledge, you know, to the younger fighters. How is the view of a young fighter now as in comparison to when you were in that position?
So for me, there was a, you know, MMA, I don't even know when I started, like 10 years ago or something. MMA in Michigan, it wasn't sanctioned when I was up and coming, especially as an amateur. So all my amateur fights, none of them were sanctioned. And it was basically the Wild West. Like, there was no sanctioning body. Promoters were putting on shows where you didn't have to have medical checks. There was, hey, you want to fight? Yeah, let's do it. This was like the day before or that night. Guys were fighting multiple times in one night. Guys would get knocked out. Promoter would go up to them and be like, hey, you want another chance at a win? You want to fight tonight? We had somebody fall out. And then, boom, those guys that just got knocked out, we're going back in the cage and fighting again. It's crazy. So that's when I grew up in mixed martial arts in Michigan. You know, now since then, way more medical. Like, you know, there's a commissioning body. It's safer for everybody. I kind of helped start that. So that's cool. I wasn't like the first, you know, like there's a lot of guys in the MMA world in Michigan that were before me that helped pave the way. So I would probably say I'm like in the middle of it, but, you know.
Do you get more nervous when one of your, you know, one of the guys you're coaching is fighting in comparison to when you're fighting?
Oh, 100%. Like, you know, it's one thing. I believe in all my skills, you know, like, the nerves are there, you know, when you get to the venue and you hear the crowd, it's like, oh man, dang, I am fighting again. And then, you know, just before you sign the contract, you're looking guys up and you're like, oh man, do I feel like fighting again? Like, you know, and that's kind of where I get my nerves, those two little spots. But other than that, they go away real fast. Cause, I guess experience or just learning how to be relaxed. But as far as getting nerves when my other guys fight, you know, I want to see these guys succeed. I invest my time and knowledge into these guys and I want to see them successful. And my ultimate goal, is to make them better than I was. You know, that's I believe the true meaning of being a coach or a mentor. You know, like the idea is I want to teach these guys from my successes, but then also the mistakes that I've made, you know, in my career. So if I can pass those along and then make an even better fighter, you know, ultimately that's the goal for, in my eyes. And that'll make the human race stronger.
Did you want to be a coach, or is this just something that kind of just came about?
You know what? I've always been in a leadership role, throughout my whole entire, I guess, career, as far as like, athletic career. I was a captain, for 3 years in my high school wrestling program. I was a captain, for 2 years at Olivet, for 2 years at Muskegon Community College. Like everywhere I've gone, I don't know, like you have leaders and then you have, you got guys that are able to lead naturally, right? You have those type of people. Some people don't do that. Some people are just quiet. They stick to themselves and they do their own thing where like, I don't know. I pick up on leading people, easy. I don't know. I just always been one of those types of people. So, I've always had like a following that, I want to be successful. And I try to go after what I need to do to be successful, but then also other people that might not have such a great idea on how to do it, they tag along. I bring them with me. I take people under my wing, and you know, I'm not always right in everything that I do, and I acknowledge that. You know, that's like how you get better, is knowing that you don't know everything, and searching and finding the people that know stuff that you don't know, and then learning from them. And that's, you know, that's what I try to live by.
And of course, this matchup here—you look at it on paper, it's that prospect. You know, Chris is 3-1. Of course, you're a vet of this sport. I guess, you know, outside looking in, you just say, hey, man, this guy's Chris is trying to make a name off you. I know that's you know, that's nothing new to you. I mean, you've dealt with this throughout your career. Is that kind of motivate you in a way to sit there and say, man, this guy thinks he's going to make a name off me, and nah, not so fast, my friend.
So here's the thing. He's from a very reputable gym. You know, he trains with a lot of studs. And I'm sure they go real hard in the gym and stuff like that. But no one's walked through me. Like, I believe I'm one of the best strikers in the world. You know, I don't always, you know, get the W. I make mistakes and stuff like that. But I'm a dangerous person. I'm a very dangerous person, especially on the feet. And if you think you're just going to walk through me, I mean, that's probably going to be your downfall, you know? So I respect everybody's ability and, you know, you have to be cautious, but confident kind of thing. If your head blows up, you know, like you're probably going to get run into something. So, you know, I expect a fight. He doesn't have a lot of experience, but he's athletic. And the reason why I think it's going to be a fight, at least for a little bit, is because he hasn't been hit yet. He hasn't been hit. He hasn't, you know, and it's always different standing in front of me. Like, not a lot of people can mimic, you know, my style or my way of fighting, especially in the gym, stuff like that. Like, it's always a different ball game when you're in front of me. So, it's going to be a fight. It'd be great for the fans. I'm not looking past him. I have to stay hungry just like everybody else. And, so it's a local fight to me, but it's the next fight in your career is always your biggest fight, always your most important fight. And that's what I see this as, my most important fight, because this will set up the rest of everything else, you know, and this is getting the ball rolling. I was just on a 4-fight win streak. I actually thought I broke my hand in my last fight, and that's kind of why I went for that takedown in the last minute of that first round. And I made a bad mistake. And since then I have really concentrated on fixing those mistakes. And, you know, let's get another fight going.
Is that the type of fight that's tough to get over? Because you just realize, like, man, it's just that one mistake.
You know what? I don't dwell on anything. You know, it's been like, I don't know, since New Year's. If I was still thinking about that, like, life would be miserable, right? Like, I mean, I thought about it I basically give myself 24 hours, like any mishaps or anything like that. You get 24 hours, you can like be down on yourself. But then after that, fucking brush it off, pick myself up, go have some fun, enjoy life, get ready for the next fight and work on things that I can work on, get better at everything, keep everything else sharp.
Based on your IG stories, it looked like you and Cody were having a good time in Japan that night.
Oh yeah. I mean, I thought I had an awesome performance up until my downfall, you know, like, beat him on my feet. I didn't take any shots. It was like, I could see in the future. He was throwing round kicks at me and I was going under him. I mean, this is, you know, it is what it is. It's a good experience. I put on a great show for the fans, especially for the Japanese fans. They love me. I love the Japanese fans, and I can't wait to fight for them again.
I did see in another interview you did. It looks like July 16th is going to be that next fight in Ryzen.
So nothing's in stone. Nothing's in stone. But that's what I'm aiming towards. That's kind of what I'm putting out there as far as what I want. Now if I get in a tournament or if I'm on that show, awesome, but nothing will be set until after this next fight.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta get through the first one before you take that next step.
Exactly.
Final thing. And you know, this is his fourth pro fight, Chris meaning. And obviously the way you look at the fight game is going to be completely different than the way he looks at it because, well, this is only his fifth professional fight. Can you remember what your mindset was in your fifth professional fight?
Dude, I had no clue what was going on. I had no clue. I don't know what he's thinking. I mean, I fought some good guys pretty on. I mean, Bobby Green for one. I fought Bobby Green in the King of the Cage And I was way too green to be fighting Bobby Green. I mean, that's kind of like a riddle. But, like, for real, like, I probably shouldn't have had that fight. I shouldn't have fought, what's his name from, I think he's Puerto Rican. I don't even know. But he was like a TKO in Michigan. I was way too green for that fight, too. Like, I should have slowed my roll as I was coming up. But I was, like, hungry and ready and I thought I could take on the world. And that's kind of where I see this guy too. You know, I mean, yeah, he could get lucky. He could maybe like the next, whatever, John Jones or whatever, but, we will see, you know, like you don't want to toot your own horn and, you definitely don't want to put yourself on a pedestal, especially being that young. Cause when you get knocked off, it's hard to climb back up, you know? And, that's kind of what I've learned. And that's where it's going, baby.
Man, I just pulled up your record. Bobby Green fight was nearly 9 years ago.
Yeah, it's crazy. And that was a battle. And it was a great fight. And I thought I won the first, I think it was the second round, right? Or whatever, yeah. Towards the, right? I was exhausted. And what I learned from that fight, never, ever take a fight at high altitude. Me and Bobby Green would have a better fight, would have gone last longer, more blows. If it wasn't, it was in like Mexico or something, way up in the, it was like 8,000 feet or something. And from that fight on, before someone asked me to fight, I ask where it's at. And then I say, nope, because it's high altitude. And it's not worth fighting in a high altitude fight because you can train as much as you want and get in the best shape. You're there for a week and you are, it's like you picked up smoking. You didn't train your entire life. It's crazy how it affects. And it's just not worth it. It's not worth it at all.
Yeah, that's and the other fight you were talking about was Luis Palomino. It was two fights after that.
Yes. I mean, dude's dangerous. Both those guys are super dangerous, UFC level guys, and I fought them before I made it to the UFC. And again, if I could go back, you know, I'd be like, hey, calm down, take some other fights, slow your roll a little, right, and fight those guys when you're making real money.
Yeah, there's a big difference between regional pay and UFC type pay. There's a big difference.
Yes.
That's the one thing I think people just don't understand, how big of a difference that is.
Yeah. No, it's a huge difference.
It is. But you got this fight here coming up on April the 24th. Warrior Wednesday number 2 there in Michigan. Darren, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, let me know if they can follow you on social media. Of course, those sponsors that are helping you out.
Yeah. So I actually want to bring up one more thing. So if you follow my Instagram, I like to post funny videos, right? And I made a video like years ago when I was in Japan about walking into a puppy store, right? And basically cracking a joke about how, you know, there's Asian cultures that eat puppies or eat dogs, right? And it was purely just a joke. I have recently had probably about 400 death threats from it. Actually, the guy that's promoting his name's Nam Pham. Yeah, I'm sure you guys know him. This isn't like, I've gotten a bunch of like hate messages and stuff, like saying that I'm a racist. Okay. I am not there's real racism out there. Me making a joke about a certain, you know, there's so many comedians out there that make a living on racial jokes. And it's funny, right? You got to laugh at that stuff. Like, the people that, I mean, if you know who I am and you've really met me, I am one of the nicest, loving people. Doesn't matter your culture or whatever it is, right? They have flipped this around and they're playing like I'm a victim. Like, Nam Pham has been blowing this up and basically calling me a racist, an Asian racist, right? I love, dude, I fight in Japan. I go there all the time. Like, the Japanese people love me. I love fighting for them. I have respect for everybody, right? This was literally just a joke. Now, if you don't think, like, the people that are calling me out on this stuff, if they've never laughed at a stereotype joke, then okay, they're like the best people in the world or whatever, right? But 99% of people have laughed at some kind of racial joke. Right. Yes. Like, I don't preach racism. Racism is evil. I don't condone it. And it really shouldn't have a place in this world. I have never judged anybody, made a decision on anybody because of their race. Right. And it's really just bullshit that they are throwing this at me. Like I said, if you know me personally, I will bend over backwards. I don't know you. I will ref your fight. I will judge you. I will coach you in a fight that I've never been before. I've never even met you before. Like, I've been to so many MMA fights and helped out so many martial artists, especially in the Michigan area. And it's crazy. And so I did some research. The people that are sending me all this hate mail and stuff like that, right, aren't even from Japan. They're American Asian people, right? And basically they all live in California and they voted for Hillary Clinton. They are making up all this stuff about me, and it really, it's watering down what real racism is, right? If they name me a racist, I am one of the nicest people in the world. One, I got called a white supremacist in one of the messages. I got to show you these messages. It's hilarious. I've been studying Judaism for 4 years now, and I, year and a half ago, I converted to Judaism. So how am I a white supremacist? I just got married to my wife, Malka Berlin. She's a practicing Jew for her whole life, right? I mean, they see this, and they just put a stamp on it, and then they go after you. It's crazy. It's crazy. And it's unfortunate because, like I said, they're just throwing that word out there, and that's a real word, and that means a lot. And for what I've done to a lot of, like, what I've helped a lot of people with, and I don't try to boast about anything like that. I take guys under my wing. I don't say anything about it, right? And for them to come at me with that and basically harass me and go after basically threatening my life. I got people saying that they want to show up to the gym and they want me to teach them how to move and dodge bullets like Neo from the Matrix. I took that as, this guy's going to come to the gym and shoot at me? I will fuck you up, dude. I do three gun. Like, I practice shooting all the time. Like, dude, this is stupid. This is all over a stupid, funny joke. I thought it was funny. I apologize if you guys took it in a different way, but I can't believe where this is going.
For you personally, are you concerned for the people in your gym that there might be someone who tries to come after you and, you know, someone else gets injured?
So, like, I guess internet bullying and stuff like that has become like out of hand, right? Out of hand in this culture these days. Like, these kids are taking things so serious, and then you know, I guess somebody could potentially come and get crazy, right? But I don't invite it, and I could definitely tell you I am always ready for it. So. Yeah.
I know anyone who Googles your name right now, the story pops up.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. This is fake. This is fake, right? Like, whatever. I mean, if there's so many people out there that are just so perfect that they've never laughed at a stereotype, which I don't think there is, but I don't know what to say. It's crazy. Nam Pham, would you ever like to make a catch weight and fight me? Because I would love that.
Do you think that could ever happen?
I don't. I would love to fight him. I mean, he's like a punch drunk old dude that I'll probably just knock out.
I mean, in today's world, how do you? I mean, obviously, you can go on. You can do multiple interviews and give your side of this equation. But how do you? It's on the internet. It lives forever.
So once somebody has an idea of you, it's especially like people that are closed-minded, it's really hard to change that idea, right? So like, people that know me will fight for me. Everybody that knows me personally will go to battle for me, right? Because that's just who I am. But people that have this, that, you know, they get this idea of, hey, you know, I want to be righteous and I'm going to pick a side. Right. And no matter what it is, I'm going to stick to it. So there's people out there that'll stick to it. And, you know, it sucks, I guess. But that's the way the world is right now. So it's unfortunate. I actually hit up because I was real concerned. I'm like, man, did I really do something wrong? Like, I didn't think that. Yeah. I mean, cultures eat dog, you know, like certain cultures eat dog. Like, that's funny. If I was in a place where they ate dog, guess what? I would probably try it, you know, because that's like what they do. Being able to laugh about it is it's whatever. But for people to call me a racist about it, like, that's crazy, because that's, like I said, we've already gone through it. You know, that's pure evil. And I have dogs. Aries, what are you doing, buddy? Right? Like, it's a joke. That's all it is. That's all it was meant to be. And if you're too soft and not laugh or whatever. So I hit up some of my good friends that I met in Japan at all the shows, like fans, but that are now friends. And we go out to breakfast. They come to my, like, they hang out after the weigh-ins, or like, dude, we go shopping during the week. Like, Japanese guys that literally are the coolest people in the world. Right. I asked them like what they thought this was, and they're like, dude, you got, or not, like, I mean, they're speaking like Japanese, but like in an English version. They're like, basically, like, you're okay. Nobody here hates you, right? Like, that. I'm like, thank God, you know, like, because they know who I am. I hang out basically every fight. Some of the same fans show up to the thing. We literally go shopping and shit. It's fucking awesome. But it's crazy that it's just a certain amount of certain few people that have blown this up way out of proportion.
Mm-hmm. I guess if you don't get in that lightweight tournament, Ryzen 16, you versus Nam Pham.
Sounds good. I think it, what weight is he? I think he's a 45 pounder.
Yeah, he's fought at 45, but I think he might have been recently fighting at 55.
Awesome. I don't even have to do a catch weight. I'll be your Huckleberry.
We'll have to see, but I do appreciate you giving your side of the story. I know that story.
Yeah, you know, I haven't really talked about it. Actually, I haven't talked about it socially at all, because it's a big topic, right? And if you're going to put a spotlight on it, it needs to be both sides. It needs to be both sides. And unfortunately, it's only been one side. And like I said, I've had crazy death threats. I've been called a white supremacist, a honky. I've been told that my parents are brother and sister. Like, that, it's crazy. It's like, okay, I get it. Like, have at it, you know, whatever. But when you threaten me, that's like, one, even if somebody did post, say it was a, like, there's no right to go threaten somebody. And I would say that probably, you know, majority of the people that are getting on social media and sending me threatening messages, they wouldn't say that shit in front of me. You know, they get a little excitement on the keyboard and stuff there. Like that.
Well, of course, got the fight next week. We look forward to seeing it. Darren, man, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know where they can find you on social media and of course, yeah, so sponsors.
Right now, my Instagram is on private, right? Because, dude, so out of all my knockouts and all that, like all this great stuff that I've ever done, I've never had so many people send me a friend request over just so they can like talk shit to me, right? So I guess you can find me on Instagram at Darren Crookshank. Twitter is Crookshank155, and my Facebook's Darren Crookshank. So check it out. You want to hate speech on me? Hit me up. I probably won't respond, but yeah.
And there was my conversations with Thomas Gifford, Alima Leigh McFarlane, and Derek Cruikshank. Appreciate all three of those fighters talking to me recently about their upcoming fights. Of course, Thomas will be a part of that UFC card next weekend. I initially was planning to be down in Fort Lauderdale, but going to be attending a wedding, a family wedding that has come up, so we'll be unable to go down to Sunrise, Florida, where that event is actually taking place. But Thomas Gifford, Roosevelt Roberts is a guy that a lot of people are very high on. Always great conversation. Alima McFarlane is honestly one of my favorite interviews. Always have fun chatting with her. And of course, then you have my conversation with Darren Cruikshank, which he talked about, you know, giving a statement on the video that surfaced this week, and obviously, clearly, very interested in a fight with Nam Phan coming up. But before we get into UFC St. Petersburg, I also want to get into Rich Franklin going into the UFC Hall of Fame. I want to talk about this article that appeared on the Forbes website on Bare Knuckle FC, which was titled "Why Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship is Ready to Follow in the UFC Footsteps." And I saw this article. Sean Wheelock had posted this, had tweeted this article, and so that's how I came familiar with it. And Daniel, my initial thought after reading the article was, this wasn't reporting. This was a public relations piece. And I'll give you two examples why I feel that, Daniel. Example number one is in the third paragraph, where the article writes, "Professional bare-knuckle fighting was never legal under any federal or state laws in the United States until Wyoming legalized the sport on March 20th, 2018. Since then, Mississippi and New Hampshire have followed suit, and five more states are expected to provide legal sanction within the next 6 months. A second example of why I feel this is nothing more than a PR piece is the last sentence in this article. It says, quote, as states begin to provide legal sanction, more and more opportunities are going to become available for fighters that want to be a part of the oldest and newest combat sport, knuckle up."
Yeah, dude, this article was bad. I read it this morning. It read like an article I wrote in sixth grade where I had to like read the Wikipedia and then immediately write it before I had to show up to class in an hour. And it was like a lot of cliches and stuff like that. I mean, here's the look. You want to? I'll show you real quick how to know if something's a PR piece or not in the world of journalism, Jason. Where's your favorite quote in this article? From again, bare knuckle, very polarizing topic. There's a lot of people not a fan of bare knuckle. Think it's too brutal, unsafe. Takes advantage of fighters after their run in MMA has gone. Where in this article is a quote from someone representing an opposing opinion on bare knuckle as a sport?
Yeah, no, that's great. And I will tell you, I was actually on a local Tampa sports radio station on Tuesday talking about this article because the host, Rock Riley, had seen me tweet about this article. And look, bare knuckle is just, it's not my thing. It's just not, I don't foresee it ever getting on network television or even cable television. To me, this is a sport that'll live in the digital world. You know, I understand, you know, the author of this article, his name is Peter Kahn, and apparently he does a podcast called The Fight Guys Podcast. I understand where the general thought of this article, how it can fall in the UFC footsteps, and it's taking, you know, where what Lorenzo Fertitta was able to do in getting this sport sanctioned and kind of translating this into what Bare Knuckle, and particularly what their Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships founder and CEO David Feldman is attempting to do. You know, one of the things that about how this is a PR piece is the part where it says about how five more states are expected to provide legal sanction within the next 6 months. Well, as a reporter, if I'm writing the story, I'm naming who those states are. You know, and this goes, and look, I thought that their timing of their last event was perfect. It was a weekend that they didn't have a UFC event, didn't have a Bellator event. They're going to have all their eyes on it. I understand that. You know, the other part, you know, the second part of this article that's talked about how, you know, what's the difference between bare knuckle fighting and street fighting is the fact of its rules. Okay, totally get that. But I think you have to also understand that this is a sport that's not for everyone. You know, I was listening to the Co-Main Event podcast, and Ben Folks was talking about how, you know, he was at that first event in Wyoming, and he's like, look, the sound of a punch is different. This is flesh on flesh. This isn't a glove, you know, hitting someone's face. I think that, you know, my advice to the bare knuckle fighting people is, if you truly want to get this sanctioned in a majority of states, and I'm going to name three states in particular: California, Nevada, and New York. My advice to them would be show up to the Association of Boxing Commission Combative Sports meeting in late July in Phoenix and state your case. Now, if David Feldman were to show up, he's going to walk into a room with a lot of executive directors with their arms crossed. And because I have been told he has attempted to reach out to commissions and they're sitting there going, nope, no interest. On this podcast back in late July, you heard the show that I had, the roundtable with Mike Mazzulli and Andy Foster. And I asked them about bare knuckle and they said, no interest. No interest at all, will never happen under our jurisdictions. And that's the problem. And I think the other problem bare knuckle will face is that video where David Feldman, even though he backtracked on it, said how he wasn't going to, you know, pay a guy because, you know, the guy didn't come to fight. And I think, like, to me, that even though he backtracked on it, Daniel, it just showed they want phone booth fighting. They don't want a fighter going in there with a game plan. They just want two guys to stand toe-to-toe and just brawl for however long it goes.
Look, bare knuckles got something going on, for sure. And there's a reason why I keep on talking about it. It's interesting somewhat, for sure. It's a polarizing topic, and it's not something I want to just completely dispel right away. But the idea that it's following in mixed martial arts footsteps, to me, is untrue. Other than the fact that they both, in the inception of the sport, it was a fight to get legalized. That is absolutely true. It was a fight for MMA to get legal in New York and be recognized as a sport. Right? It started off as something that is thought of as barbaric and eventually becomes a sport and you know, signs a deal with ESPN, yada, yada, yada. That's somewhat similar to the trajectory, although bare knuckle, again, it's just it is a bit more brutal. It makes less sense to someone watching TV that this should be a thing. You know, MMA is on the line, right? When we read about concussions and stuff, and bare knuckle is just at a whole another level. Also, the one thing that's a bit upsetting, not upsetting, but it's just stupid in my opinion, is I hate how like bare knuckle has to follow the MMA road path. If bare knuckle is going to become something, it's going to blaze its own trail. It's going to do it a different way. Let's stop pretending. Like freaking Artem Lobov versus Jason Knight was Forrest Griffin versus Stefan Bonner. Because it wasn't. It was just a brutal fight that was exciting. But my neighbor isn't talking about Artem Lobov. My friend, who's a casual sports fan, doesn't know who Jason Knight is. Hey, Forrest Griffin, Stefan Bonner, people change the channel. That changed the sport. And not only that, the sport of the UFC, the promotion UFC, had things to deliver right away. Boom. You watch that. Guess what? You know, here's a Chuck Liddell fight. Here's a Tito Ortiz fight. All those guys in the Ultimate Fighter, they're part of the UFC now. It was, let's go. Let's get the ball rolling. The ball isn't rolling to bare knuckle. And the amount of people, you know, it's just, yeah, let's stop pretending Artem Lobov, Jason Knight was this game-changing fight that put bare knuckle on the forefront. You know, get legalized in California first and come talk to me. So, you know, sport's interesting somewhat. Not a fan of it, really. Don't see it following in the footsteps of MMA. Maybe it could. I'm open to all things being legal, to be completely honest with you. But for bare knuckle, yeah, if I had to guess, I don't think the sport's going to follow the same trajectory as mixed martial arts.
Here is, I think, two things that I think they have to kind of answer. And this goes to the regulatory side of it. While I mentioned, not necessarily my cup of tea, but I understand there is an audience out there. There's no question. There clearly is an audience out there. But I think the one question here is, A, are you using veteran MMA fighters that may or may not should still be fighting? And B, how much medical testing is going on when you're going to these smaller commissions? Because here's what's happening, and they have to do this. They're commission shopping.
Yeah. And the infrastructure may not be there in some of the commissions.
I wonder, and I was thinking about this before we started recording. I was like, maybe I'm going to reach out to Mississippi Athletic Commission and say, I got two questions for you. What medical testing was required for fighters to get licensed? And B, was there any drug testing?
That's a great question to ask. You need to ask that question because you look at these commissions.
Look, on drug testing, I'm pretty sure I know the answer.
Yeah.
I'm pretty safe to say I know the answer.
It costs money to do it.
Yeah, I'm pretty safe to say probably if there was drug testing, there wasn't much, if any.
Yeah.
But
and
it
that's
would
dangerous
it would
not to do drug testing.
It would be interesting on to find out what medical testing in comparison to medical testing that, let's say, an MMA fighter has to go through in Nevada, California, and New York.
I think it's going to be startling if you contrast those two.
But let's move on. Let's move on.
Okay.
So Saturday, they announced Rich Franklin's going into the UFC Hall of Fame. You know what my first thought was?
What was your first thought?
I thought he was already in.
Really?
And I saw other people saying that on social media. For some reason, I just thought he was already in the Hall.
I can see it, man. I can see it. I mean, he's a hallmark of the UFC, and he's always been on a good relationship with the UFC. You know, even being an executive in ONE FC doesn't seem to – you know, it seems like they got a good little relationship, those two promotions, you know. Yeah, I can see that for sure. Definitely a Hall of Famer. You know, I think he's an OG in terms of, like, the Joseph Benavidez spot. If Anderson Silva didn't exist, dude would be like an all-time great.
Dude, like, you think about it. Think about his run when he came into the UFC at UFC 50. Or he was in the UFC even before that. But you look at his run from, you know, 2005 to October 2006 when he lost to Anderson. Man, I mean, the Nate Quarry knockout is going to be on the highlight reels forever. I mean, you look at that time. I mean, he was the face of the UFC at 185 pounds. Unfortunately, Anderson comes in and, you know, couldn't get past that. But, I mean, like, you just look at it. I mean, outside of – I mean, he just went in there and just stopped dudes every time out when he was fighting. And then, you know, I mean, look, there's certain, you know, memories I'll have of him. I mean, I remember my brother got married the day that he fought Chuck Liddell. And we were literally at a sports bar that night watching that fight. He breaks his arm and still knocks out Chuck Liddell. I mean – and this was a guy that, you know, he was, when the UFC needed somebody, he was there for him.
Yeah, he was, man. And a guy, you know, brought in the UFC, his storyline was he was a math teacher. And it just happened to be a fighter. I mean, you know, you look at some of the best middleweights of all time. You know, obviously we have some great ones going today. But, I mean, the list is, you don't have to go too far down the list until you get to Rich Franklin. I mean, I think obviously Anderson Silva and Dan Henderson. You know, Vanderlei Silva, I guess you'd put him there. And God, I mean, that may be it before you get to Rich Franklin. Like Rich Franklin's definitely a top five, top six, seven middleweight of all time. I think the list, some of the guys we see now, you could absolutely buck them off the list. And I'm not necessarily comparing talent level because obviously the sport evolves. But just in terms of, like, how the success they had against their contemporaries, Rich Franklin is up there. And so well-deserving of the Hall of Fame for Rich Franklin, a guy who was never a problem for the UFC, just a perfect employee, had some phenomenal fights with Vanderlei Silva in the UFC towards the end of his career. And again, a former UFC middleweight champion, an absolute pioneer for the company.
I mean, it's been 7 years since he fought.
Yeah, yeah.
Which also is kind of why you just kind of thought that he was already in the Hall of Fame. I mean, I know I wasn't the only person, but just, I mean, well-deserving of going into the UFC Hall of Fame. There's no question about it. But, yeah, man, that was just one of those I was looking at going, wow, he's not in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, same here, man, same here. What's crazy is Dan Henderson's not in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, yeah, but congratulations to Rich Franklin, very well deserved. Of course, this weekend we've got the UFC Fight Night card on ESPN Plus over from St. Petersburg, Russia. I will not be watching this one live. I'm actually taking my 6-year-old nephew over to Universal Studios for a couple days. I guess it's always cool when your 6-year-old nephew still wants to hang out with his uncle. So that's all. I guess that's a good thing. He's never had a chance to go to Universal, so looking forward to spending a couple days over there. Myself, my wife, and our nephew. So I will be watching this, but, like, I feel like this is a ESPN Fight Night card that, like, if you're a Russian MMA hipster, you love this card.
If you go to sleep with an M1 Global t-shirt, you love this card.
There are people that wake up like 5 o'clock in the morning to watch a card rush that are absolutely loving this event.
Yeah, this is an M1 card with the UFC logo slapped on it. I mean, this card sucks. Like, I'm not looking forward to it. I'm going to watch it all because that's what I got to do, Jason. It's what I got to do. I got to watch these cards and stuff. But, God, this card sucks. But I'm sure it's going to work for the local audience. I mean, you're giving them local talent in Russia. But in terms of fights that matter in these weight classes, there's just not a whole lot on the bone. I like the main event over in Olenek. You know, two middleweights that are coming off wins. There you go. I know Olenek's a little underdog. I think he might win this fight, though. I think he might slap on a submission on Alistair Overeem and get that win. I think Islam Makhachev is a fighter absolutely worth watching in the co-main event. I think Antonina Shevchenko, I'm excited to see your take on Roxanne Modafari. But for all intents and purposes, this fight card is incredibly weak. But we will still talk about, you know, the noteworthy events that take place in St. Petersburg.
One of the things I love about Tapology is you can see the amount of canceled fights a fight card have. And this one, 7 canceled fights. We had a contract violation. We've had multiple injuries. One of those injuries, or health issues, as it's called, with Alexander Volkov. It was, of course, supposed to take on Alistair Overeem in the main event of this fight. Of course, Alexei Olenek is stepping up on short notice to take this fight. Volkov, unable. Apparently, there's some issues there with Alexander Volkov in terms of why he's not fighting here. But Alistair Overeem in this spot. I feel like for the past couple years, I have just counted out Overeem. You think about the majority decision when he had it for Fabricio Werdum, which wasn't the greatest of fights. Then he gets knocked out by Ngannou. Then he gets knocked out by Curtis Blaydes, and of course he comes back in November of last year and got that win. I believe that was a China card, Pavlovich, that he got the win against. Now he takes on Alexei Olenek, who, I mean, look, stay away from the ground, Alistair. Stay away from the ground. Otherwise, you might get Ezekiel choked in this one. You look at Alexei Olenek, since coming into the UFC, his only losses coming against Daniil Olomouchkov, which was a majority decision loss back in 2016, and losing in the second round against Curtis Blaydes in 2017. Since then, getting wins against Junior Albini and also Mark Hunt. I mean, Alexei Olenek, I mean, very quietly has been rising up the UFC heavyweight rankings. And this is kind of, to me, it's a fight that whoever wins this fight kind of puts himself probably 2 fights away from a title fight.
I think so, especially for Overeem. But honestly, for both guys, because you get a win here, you're going to continue to get elevated for opponents that are on the other side of the cage from you. And both these guys are stalwarts in the heavyweight division. So once again, at the end of the day, the UFC is still putting on at least one fight per card that is interesting. And they've done that here with Overeem and Olenek. This fight does matter in this weight class. It does. And either guy could use each other as a nice little platform. The expectation is Overeem's going to win this fight. For sure. He's proven it more at a high level. And obviously he's got great power. Still, my pick is Olenek. I still think he's a guy, when he's an underdog, he performs well, especially against guys with name value that maybe are past their prime. And for Olenek, I think this is a perfect opportunity for him to get an upset.
You mentioned about that co-main event. Of course, everyone, Islam Makhachev, everyone knows who he is. But his opponent now making his UFC debut. I hope I don't butcher it. I'm not looking forward to my DFS show tomorrow because I'm going to butcher so many of these names on this card. Armin, I'm just going to call him Armin T because I'm going to butcher that last name. The one thing that sticks out to you is you look at this run he's been on, which he has not lost since his second professional fight back in 2015. You look at his opponent's records when he fought him his past couple of fights: 15-5, 16-6, 25-12, 19-11, 6-1, 7-5, 6-1. This is a guy that is taking on fighters with a very good strength of competition. So to me, that definitely is something that interests you. And I think there's multiple guys you look on this card that I think is kind of in that way of saying, hey, we may not know who they are right now, But they are definitely fighters that this could be a fight card that you look back on and say, hey, you remember when that fighter made their UFC debut at that card in Russia? So to me, that's what's is probably what would be intriguing about the fights underneath the main event is trying to see some of these guys coming in or ladies. Shevchenko obviously is someone you're interested in on this fight card and seeing kind of how they develop and how they look, you know, inside the UFC.
Yeah, man, that's what these cards are. You know, there are names we aren't talking about today that we'll talk about next week for sure. And that's why we watch the fights. We watch them to see impressive performances, see guys or girls who perform at a interesting level, surprise us, maybe pull off an upset. You know, maybe Makhachev's vulnerable there. So I'm looking forward to watching the event. You know, I always enjoy the different atmospheres. It's just one of those events where I'm going to watch at my own pace. It's not appointment viewing, and I would recommend people not watch it live. Although it'd probably be on an hour that is reasonable. Like, do you know what hour this show's on?
Main card, what? 1 p.m. Eastern time.
To be honest with you, I might watch it. I mean, to be honest with you, I probably won't watch it live, but I may watch the prelims live just because I have to go to work.
Yeah,
but
prelims 10 a.m. Eastern time.
I might wake up and put this on my computer and just get the prelims under my belt and then, you know, come home after I work the soccer game and watch it. You know, it's a long weekend, so it might be a nice little pre-warm up if you're a big, you know, playoff guy, whether it be hockey or basketball, watch this card. So it's the perfect time for cards like this, I'll tell you that much, because I don't want it to compete with like my nighttime activities. But if it's the beginning of the day, you know, we'll see.
Hockey season's over for me.
I know. I saw the Tampa Bay Lightning literally tweet out, "We have no words." It's like, I have some words. 0-4. All right. It's all about the Dallas Stars.
Dude. Oh, man. We were up 3-0 game one into the first period, and I was out with my buddy having dinner. And I said to him, I said, "This series is over. It's over. Like, this is going to be a sweep." You know, and then, good Lord. Oh, man. Just torch. Just completely out Coach Cooper. And, yeah. So it's all NBA for me, which, I mean, obviously, happy to finally watch a Magic game in the playoffs. It's been a long time. But I'm a big basketball fan. So, but I'll give you another name that interests me on the UFC card. Movsar Evilov. He is a undefeated fighter, 10-0, primarily has fought for M1 Challenge. You know, he's coming off a win against Rafael Diaz in a five-round fight where he won the bantamweight title. So that's another name to pay attention to. So, you know, it's, you know, look, Saturday's UFC card doesn't have the name value outside of the main event, but it's a localized UFC card in Russia. That's what it is.
Give me some Alan Amadovsky. All right, he's taking on Krzysztof Jatko. Undefeated. All right. He knocked out his last opponent in 12 seconds. Jatko, man, he's running to a red. You know, give me some Alan Amadovsky, Jason. Give me a shot of that.
Yeah.
That'll be my pick for fighter to watch under the radar.
Yeah, I'll be watching these fights definitely after the fact. Be sure to head over to the MMAReport.com. Already got some interviews up there. Sherrard Blackledge, Brandon Marat, Ray Rodriguez, Adrian Guzman, Jordan Williams. Sherrard Blackledge fights on Friday night at FFC 35 in Vegas. Brandon Marat fights on Friday at Combat Zone. Also on Friday at Combat Zone, Luis Carrapi stepping up on 9 days' notice. Got an interview coming out with him later on today. Daniel, when he took this fight, he was changing dirty diapers.
Wow.
So him and his wife are watching their nephew. I want to say nephew and niece. Or I want to say he told me they're one and 4 years old. And he's like, you know, they've both been sick. And he's like, so we've been, you know, watching them for the past couple of days. And he goes, "Louis, I get the phone call. I am changing a poopy diaper." And so I said, I go, "So since you were watching them and they were, you know, staying with you for a couple of days," I go, "did you have to ask your wife if you could take the fight?" He goes, "She was going to be taking a fight." So very funny story I got from him. Ray Rodriguez fights this weekend in Corpus Christi, Texas. Really interesting conversation with him is he owns a gym in San Antonio, and what he's been doing is he's been offering free monthly memberships to law enforcement officers to come in and train with the team and learn and also to help out police officers if they find themselves in a situation on the street where maybe they got to defend themselves a little bit. So it was really a great conversation with Ray. Adrian Guzman fights next weekend. A Combate 35. Of course, Jordan Williams fights next weekend, Bellator 220. I also got some interviews coming out with Corey Cuppy, who's going to be fighting at Lights Out Championship. He's actually moving up to middleweight after winning the super lightweight title. Brett Martin, their heavyweight champion, got an interview with him coming up. Robert Hale, who's on that card. So got a ton of interviews to look out for. Next week on the podcast, going to be joined by Bellator 220's John Fitch and Adam Piccolotti. Really interested to kind of talk about John Fitch with him about, obviously he's going to be a massive underdog against Rory McDonald and kind of get his take on why he thinks he might win that fight. Of course, next week, we are going to preview Bellator 220. Of course, that event that will be streamed on DAZN. Of course, we'll talk about everything else going on in May. Of course, if you're not subscribed, rate, and review this podcast, we really appreciate you do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. Dale, anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here?
Not much. Just thank you to everyone for listening, and look forward to being back here next week.
And of course, a new episode comes out every Wednesday, RadioInfluence.com, TheMMAReport.com, wherever you listen to podcasts. If there's a podcasting app that the MMA Report podcast is not on, shoot me a tweet at Jason_Floyd. I'll make sure the podcast gets on that platform as well. So this is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
Former WCW and current WWE referee extraordinaire Charles Robinson. So you did Ric Flair's retirement match at WrestleMania 24.
Retired him. Yeah. Shawn Michaels didn't retire him. If the count wouldn't have happened, he wouldn't be retired. So I retired Ric Flair. I retired Shawn Michaels. I retired a couple of the two greatest.
When did you
say that in jest?
Of course you do. When did you find out that you would be the referee for that match that Flair requested? Did you request it, or how did that come about?
It just happened. I don't know if Rick requested it. I certainly didn't request it because I don't like to request matches. I like to just deal with what I'm given and do the best that I can. But I was lucky enough to get it done. But I think we knew like a month out that I was going to referee that match.
A very emotional finish. One of the most emotional and memorable finishes in a match that I could think of in all the years I've been watching wrestling, where he said, "I love you, I'm sorry," right before he gave him the super kick and pinned him. As a referee and a Ric Flair fan, we talked about how in the beginning, the early stages, you marked out at stuff and you kind of, now it's just part of the business. Was there any emotion in that ring that you felt at the moment, or are you just there to do your job and then soak it up later?
Going into the go-home sequence, with the kick and all, I think all of us were already crying. So there was a lot of emotion in the ring. Who wasn't emotional that night? We were all crying. I rolled right out of the ring because I was sobbing.
I always say my favorite WCW moment was when Ric Flair came back in the Horseman in Greenville, North Carolina, when Arn put him back together. But to me, that moment was as memorable watching on TV as the Horseman moment was live. And just there's certain moments that you'll never forget. And that, I love you, I'm sorry. It's just unbelievable. It still gives me goosebumps now that we're talking about it.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.